It comes to the black underworld. We're not talking about it. Black underworld loaned the money. Preachers didn't have no money. Teachers didn't have no money. Wasn't no banks. Mm-hmm. With the black gangsters, so-called black gangsters, you know. And they were the one that had justice. When that was a rapist, when the police didn't care about no black man raping somebody, it was the justice of the black underworld. Our crime level was very, very low when the black underworld was around. And they were the bankers. They were the one that had the nightclub, you know. So many of those guys who went to World War II came back very, very, very ready, man, to confront injustices in black America. That's what I was trying to lead to. It was the black underworld that funded NAACP, Urban League, a lot of the black movements.
I see.
To the black underworld.
Because you have to wonder where that funding came from.
Huh?
You have, one has to understand where that funding came
from. The funding came from gambling, bootleg. I won't use the word prostitution. My father had the word sex merchants. Pleasure entrepreneurs.
Pleasure entrepreneurs. As that's a swift way to put it.
That's a nice word. That's a nice word. But I was reading my, I read my Quran every morning, and I read the Bible every morning. And I was calling my wife here about prostitutes. Did I get it?
No, sir.
Okay. Here it is right here. Harlots.
Which one?
Harlots. Prostitutes. It's a nice word for prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And here it is right here.
I'm sending to my way when I buy and die. Send them honest.
Does that say whoredom? Yeah.
Whoredom.
Hoes.
Without saying whore.
Yeah. Hoes. Sex merchants.
Mm-hmm.
Pleasure expert. Pleasure entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
When you, how was it growing up in Phyllis Wheatley during segregation? When you went to Phyllis Wheatley High School?
It's probably, for me, segregation was positive. We were against integration.
Okay.
The black underworld was against integration. I was against it. I with the debates, the arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the upper black middle class were for integration.
Integration.
The black underworld was totally against it. You know, like my daddy would say, grass is grass on either side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that our economics would be messed with, you know. Destroyed, which integration did destroy. Because what happened when your black middle class moved out, that was the death of the black community.
Mm-hmm.
So we were against that. When you're raised in a community like ours, crime rate was low. We didn't have burglar bars on churches. You know, all the back doors were open. But no crime. The crime rate.
Fifth Ward wasn't, what it's painted now wasn't what it was.
Oh, no, no, man. Fifth Ward was a prosperous neighborhood. Yes, go to your historical things about Fifth Ward. You had the Club Matinee, which was like the Apollo Theater of Lyons Avenue. You had four black theaters.
Really?
You had the Lyons Theater, the Deluxe Theater, the Roxy Theater, and the Justin Theater. We had four theaters that was packed on Saturdays, man.
Really?
And in the daytime, it was for kids.
The Nickel?
It was Nickel. You can get in 10, but in the daytime, parents who went to shop.
Okay.
So in the daytime, it was filled with children, all four theaters. We had an economic base because white folks didn't want our money. No segregation. White folks didn't want our money.
You built the community.
Yeah, so the money's went in a circle.
Gotcha.
You know, you had restaurants, you had cleanesses, barbecue joints, you had schools, you had nursery schools, you had churches, clothing stores, Caldwell Taylor's, Kirby John's father. Now, Kirby John's Caldwell, who's a minister now, he lived one block from me, right behind me. His father had one of the best tailoring shops.
Yeah.
You know, then you had Jeff's, you had C.F. Lear. The white folks did not want our businesses. So when people printed from Tuskegee or T. Prairie View or Houston, Tulsa, Then they opened their businesses up in the black community.
Yeah.
So you had middle class, upper middle class, then you had middle, then you had working class, blue collar, then you had the gray collar class, then you had the black underworld, which fall on the concept invisible social construct. The black underworld, you couldn't see it.
Gotcha.
It was, and it's called invisible social construct. Invisible. Couldn't nobody see these guys. Social. You know, men working together for that community.
Right.
Construct, organization, building, construction. So your nightclubs played a very important role. You know, your they called gambling, liquor, music. You allow musicians. Most of your great musicians started in black clubs.
That's true. That's true.
You know, so when Count Basie came to Houston, or Duke Ellington came to Houston, they couldn't live in a white hotel. They lived in the black, they lived in Fifth Ward or Third Ward Hotel.
Yeah, I had to take care of them.
Yeah, but they would play for the white folks.
Ah.
Well, they had to return to the black community to sleep. So they would play, so the musicians, when they came, they would split up. They might come to some play over at the matinee. Some might come to Lee's Congo Bar and Cafe. You know, some might play at the La Jolla. Mm-hmm. Then you had the, like, the band, you know, the Jazz Crusaders are from Fifth Ward.
Right.
Eleanor Jacquette is from Fifth Ward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got some of them brothers, what the brothers' name with TSU play trumpet, a bunch of them. So segregation, apartheid, I'd like to use that word because it's similar to what was happening in South Africa. All your great minds were forced together during segregation.
So it had to be relationships formed with these artists that came in town.
Yeah. And see, the most respected person at that time was an athlete. Wasn't a football. Football players, great. Mm-hmm. Basketball players. But it was the artists, man. It was the musicians. It was the artists, poets, writers. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Old were the cats.
Intellectual thing.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Jazz musician.
Yeah. Cerebral.
Yeah. Sports kind of came. Sports developed today after like the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. Because in the 60s, the athletes were activists. Muhammad Ali was an activist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Abu Jamal was an activist. Jim Brown, who played fullback for the Cleveland Browns, was an activist.
Speaking of sports and activists, you ran track.
Yes.
And you got a scholarship at Southern?
Yeah, went to Southern.
Talk about that a little bit. How you did you run any integrated track meet?
Yes. First time I would do it, I was in high school. I was the only high school athlete that was invited to a college track meet because I was doing college. And it was indoor meet here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a segregating city. I had to change in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And with my high school coach. But, me and a boy named Darryl Dawson was the only two athletes. High school athletes. Now, you know how this pissed them white boys off.
That's what I was going to ask you, how they received.
Oh, they made it hard. We were called nigga, understand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you some of these, sweetheart. This is the young man that I ran with at the track meet. We met, he and I, Mickey Leland, would meet at Athena Elementary School. That's Darryl Dawson.
Okay, so
that's me there.
Okay.
And he and I were the first two high school athletes to run at an integrated track meet.
Okay. I have that flyer, so that's good. Thank you.
And now they gave us hell.
I can imagine.
They gave us hell. They and
some of the examples.
Yeah, they gave us hell. And see, my sport primarily was high jump. That was my favorite. Okay. I was 6'8", 6'9", 6'10". You know, my role model, though, was no one in America. My role model was a Russian high jumper named Valery Brumel, B-R-U-M-E-L. He was 6 feet tall, we're doing 7 feet. And quiet as a kept, my hero was a communist, was a Marxist.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Valerie Brumel.
Valerie Brumel.
B-R-U-M-E-L.
Okay.
I would never tell no one. But he was 6 feet tall doing 6'8", 6'9". That would made me so dynamic. I could do 6'8", 6'9", because you want to do 6'9", you got to do 6'11". When you do 6'10", you got to do 7 feet. Gotcha. When you do 7 feet, you got to do 7'3". But I saw him in NCAA TV thing when they brought him over to America. And from that moment on, I wouldn't tell anyone, though. But my hero as a high jumper was Russian, Marxist, Valerie Brumel. He was bad. Him and a guy named John Thomas from Boston University were like, John Thomas was black, but I love Valerie Brumel because he was 6 feet tall.
And was it a jump specifically that you just...
It was called a Western roll, where now you have the Fallsberry flop.
Okay.
It was called a Western roll, and he had the Western roll. Okay. Most Americans were doing what was called the scissor, the scissor. Okay. And I'll have some... I'll give you some history of my track history.
Now, you said you went to elementary with Mickey Leland?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mickey and I, we would meet at Atherton Elementary School.
Okay.
And this is how we met. When Mickey was a little youngster, he almost looked like he was white.
Really?
He had blonde hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine a little boy 8, 9 years old would make me look like that. Yeah. And light skinned, and he had these grayish eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother was a teacher, and his grandmother was a teacher. Me and a boy named Latter Earl Alton were crossing guards every morning, either. But every morning, this niggas called the Broussard. They looked like little pygmies, man. I used to say, they would chase me. Mickey wouldn't fight. He wouldn't fight. He would not fight. He would not fight. The day he died, he wouldn't fight.
Really?
So every ball, he'd be running.
Yeah.
And they'd be behind it. You know, he'd run on, and either time he'd be running, he'd be waiting on. So one day I figure I'd stop that shit. Because I love fighting.
Right.
You're raised around nightclub.
Yeah.
That would make me so good. I loved it. I love fighting. You know, when you fight somebody, the love fighting, you're in trouble. I loved it. I just loved it, man, you know. And I put my pole, my crossing guard thing, Mickey, we were running, you know, he lived behind the junior seat, Hester House. I decided to stop it, man, so I snatched one of them Broussards,
yeah.
You know, and it didn't take much to move, and I walked Mickey home, and met his mother, which was a beautiful woman. I thought my mother was the prettiest woman in the world until I saw Mickey's mom, and we stay friends to the day that we developed from Atherton Elementary School together. He and I, Darryl Dotson.
Okay.
Went on Neil Smith together. Went to Wheatley together. It was real, very clear that Mickey had leadership very early.
Okay.
Very early. He never smoked. He never drank. He was raised to be very mannable. You know, where I was raised around a nightclub. I could speak all the languages. I'm slick.
Yeah.
Keep money in my pocket.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, when I was 8, 9 years old, people would tell the folks, keep your dollar away from it, you know. Because I was raised around the female sex merchants and the male sex merchants. I was raised around all that.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey had a quality very early, something like Franco.
Okay.
You know, I shielded Franco from all of that. President of Student Council at Wheatley. Mickey was pole vaulter, played football in both ways.
Defense and offense.
Defense and offense, man. You know, wonderful human being. I was always, and see, when I brought Franco and Mickey into politics, it was May 1970. Me, Mickey, Franco, and Carl Hampton would meet.
Carl Hampton?
Carl went to Wheatley.
Okay.
Carl from Pleasantville, right?
Okay.
And we all would meet that night, all night. I would show them how to organize rainbow coalitions, you know. Because back in during the 60s, it was very easy. It's very easy to organize around racism. It's very easy to organize around
hate. The energy and the attitudes.
It's very easy to organize around hate. You know, because everybody have an oppressor. And it's very easy to generalize about another race being your oppressor. It's easy. Racism is a satanic policy, because we are not born to hate. Mm-hmm. We're not born a racist. Mm-hmm. You know, we're born in an act of love.
That's the liberalism aspect of things.
Yeah.
We're not born evil.
Yeah, we're not born evil. We're not born to hate no one. Mm-hmm. God didn't send us here to do that. That's why I don't believe no racist. There's no you who's who mm-hmm. in heaven for a racist. Mm-hmm. God has sent us here mm-hmm. with that. Mm-hmm. Now, I believe that.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay. So, with Carl and Franco on them, and that's where we were. And then, too, during segregation, you showed me a black man or woman that their parents sit them down and taught them to hate another human being. Mm-hmm. Show me. Introduce me to him. He's lying. Mm-hmm. The black family, especially the black mother, we're a product of being taught love. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We're taught that, man, as a people. Mm-hmm. Even during slavery, we were taught that. Mm-hmm. You know. So that was the thing I would emphasize in all my organizing to today. Mm-hmm. You know, and Mickey had that quality. Franco had that quality. Carl had that quality. And when we split up that morning, me, Franco and Mickey would go to Austin to organize. I would emphasize with Carl, because I was field secretary from the Black Panther Party then.
Okay, yes, this is your return.
May 1970. My mother used to tell me over and over, my dad would too, I don't care what you're doing in Chicago. It ain't nothing till you come home.
It ain't nothing till you come home.
My daddy used to tell me. Okay. And my mother would say, until you go to Jasper and do it. And that's that wrong with me. It took, you know, it's real easy to sit up in Chicago and talk about off the pig.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's easy.
Mm-hmm.
To do it at Berkeley Cal, or Columbia University.
Right.
Or University of Pittsburgh somewhere, or University of Chicago campus, you know.
Right.
That's another thing, you come to Houston.
And this was before Fred Hampton's murder?
Fred had been killed. Fred Hampton of Chicago leadership was killed December 4th, 1969.
So with that,
him and Mark Clark. And that's documented in the murder of Fred Hampton.
Right.
Then I came home in May 1970, Carl Hampton.
Right, Carl Hampton.
From Fifth Ward.
From Fifth Ward, Black Panther.
Right.
Right.
And I emphasized to Carl, one, don't name him the Black Panther Party.
Okay.
So he named it People's Party 2.
Okay.
He opened it up on Dowling, a block from St. John's Church, across the street from Emancipation Park.
Right.
When Carl opened his office, June 1970, July, he was killed by the Houston Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Snipe
mm-hmm.
from top of St. John Baptist Church.
Can I read something to you real quick? It's in regards to Carl Hampton. This is a magazine, the Houston History magazine in my class
mm-hmm.
that we're actually taking. I'm actually taking right now in reference to this article. And I saw this before I even started doing my research on you and learning about Carl Hampton. And it's a young lady, she's older now, but she wrote a story about her experiences at what is now the Emancipation Park. And going there as a kid, you know, she was 8 years mm-hmm. old, and you know, the biggest thing that she can remember is eating cotton candy and just having a great time with her family. And she said that, and then there was the day in 1970 when I forced my father as he drove down Dowling Street to turn his head to actually see rifles sternly and proudly held by the Black Panthers in front of their offices located at the corner from the park. At home, he insisted that there were no guns. Those boys were bluffing, he told me. He said, I dared him to drive back to see for himself. He did, taking me with him. As he drove near to the site, I regretted my dare when I saw my father's hands trembling on the steering wheel. My father was born in 1899. As I watched the fear grow in my father's old eyes, I saw him turn and look straight into the fearless eyes of those armed young men. Shortly after that day, July 26, 1970, Houston police gunned him down. And that would be...
Our seventh, our 10-point program number 7 is end the police brutality and end the murder of black people. that was a major emphasis that black people wanted, is to stop the oppression of white police. For a century and a half, if you research, there are hundreds and hundreds of unsolved murders of black people, black men, and rapes of black women by police.
Right.
You know, Selma, Alabama, the march in Selma, and my mother by the name is Selma, that showed Bull Connor was no phenomenon. There was no murders in the South. Well, again, I'll say, man, there are hundreds and hundreds of unsolved murders and rapes of black women by policemen. Mm-hmm. It would stagger you, man. So that was the emphasis that the black community wanted us to do.
And so the story of Carl Hampton, that was really close to you.
Yeah, very. Carl first was a friend. Carl was no stranger.
Right, absolutely.
Secondly, I sat with him all night. He and I, Mickey and Franco, strategizing about organizing. My emphasis was to don't wolf the police car. Stay away from them. Don't wolf them. Mm-hmm. You know, but he got pulled into that rhetoric. And he was dead in July. Mm. And Franco could have been there, because at that time we were organizing, laying the groundwork for a free health clinic. My thing was, first you organize programs to educate the people. Breakfast program, free health clinics, you know, libraries, a recreational social program for seniors and things like that. But May, June, July, Carl didn't get a chance. Killed, sniped. Killed from off the top of St. John Baptist Church. He attacked the police.